This is Sportsline on WRMJ and WRMJ.com.
He breaks free. He's inside the 20, the 10, the 5.
A weekly in-depth look at the local high school sports scene.
Touchdown, Mercer County. Touchdown, Golden Eagles.
Sportsline is brought to you by your local country financial representatives, Tracy Bigham, Jason Potter, and Brent Bigham, offering insurance for your life, health, home, auto, farm, or business.
Get a launch of three at the gun. No good, and the Rockets have won the game. The Rockets head back to state.
By 6140 Run in Galesburg, your spot for custom-fitted running and walking shoes, Hey Dude shoes and Birkenstock sandals, plus Red Wing and Wolverine work boots.
A three at the gun is no good, and this game is over! The Tigers have won! They're going to celebrate! Purple and gold converging on the Don Morris Gymnasium floor! Unbelievable!
By Diamond Ag, your local ag retailer supplier, built from your local specifications with locations in Alito, Alexis, and Knoxville.
She throws the first three in a row for Rockridge! The Rockets have won three state titles in a row in softball.
And by Dale Jones with Merit Auctions. If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale at 309-299-6400. And now, from the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios in downtown Alito, here's Jim Taylor and Ty Taylor with Sportsline.
All right, the WMJ Sportsline on a Saturday morning, a tradition that started way back in 1979 with this great local radio station. Signed on, I'm Jim Taylor, Ty Taylor alongside. We're at the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studio in downtown Alito, and I'm assuming Carter Brown has been named king again of the Sherrard School District or whatever they're doing. But a great atmosphere tonight. Now, coming up later in the program, we'll talk some high school wrestling. Good to visit with Bob Mitten. Of course, they named the tournament after him, and in his interview, of course, which only Bob Mitten could say so perfectly, it's now, you know, it's not the Bob Mitten Memorial Tournament. So I love that line. But 42 years for that great event, and Bob talks about some other stuff, you know, culture of high school sports and how things have changed in 42 years. So I think that thing started in like 1984 or something like that. But so he'll be on. But, you know, I know a lot of people listening this morning, and, you know, with what went on last night. And I thought my initial observation, I thought Alex Johnson said it so perfectly on the postgame show last night, that the 1 point difference, the one extra point, I asked him, I said, was that because of that crowd that was there for last night from Sherrard? And his answer was unequivocally yes. So that matters. And that's how I'll start the conversation. Really impressed with the Sherrard following all season long, but they came out last night, and I think their crowd really spurred them on to the victory in the second half last night when Sherrard kind of pushed the tempo a little bit, and but it came down to, you know, 1 point, right? And three shots at the end with 10 seconds that basically, from my angle, every one of them looked like they were going in for Rockridge, but that was the separation. That's how close the separation of that game was last night.
Yeah, I think last night was just, and we talked about this on our post-game coverage too, like it was just everything that high school sports and high school basketball should be. And with the crowd and with what the game meant for both teams, I mean, there was a lot on the line, of course, in terms of, like, you know, the conference race, postseason seeding stuff too, but just even without that, like Rockridge and Sherrard, when they play, it just feels like such a big deal every time. And for Sherrard to win two times in a row over Rockridge, where, again, we talked about this last night too, like Rockridge has been kind of that hurdle for everybody in the area that nobody is ever able to clear over the last 10 or 15 years. You build yourself up and then you finally get to play in Rockridge and you get stomped out every time. Well, that hasn't happened this year, where Sherrard has now swept them in the regular season. And just kind of looking at the trajectory of, like, in my opinion, where the Sherrard program's going, I mean, like, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but they might return the favor of like 13 or so wins in a row now against Rockridge, sweeping them this year. And I know, like, when you look at kind of the younger kids that Sherrard has too, I think that, you know, the next 3-4 or so years, like, Sherrard's going to have more talent than Rockridge. So, for them to kind of kick down that door. And like Coach Johnson said last night too, like this isn't the finale of their season. Winning two games against Rock Ridge is big, and you don't want to understate that, but also there's bigger goals that that team has and that they can achieve if they keep playing at the level that they have. And we talked about this last week too with Sherrard, to trail by double digits against Mercer County and Monmouth Roseville, and even Sterling, who's solid and come back and win, is a lot different than doing it on the road against Rock Ridge, where you're down 11 with like 6 minutes to play in the third, and you come back and beat a team of that quality in the low scoring game like that too, was so impressive. So I just think like Coach Johnson, his staff and those kids, man, deserve credit. What a performance down the stretch to do something you rarely see, where you rarely see that Rock Ridge program watch an 11-point lead wilt away. And that's what happened. It's just, it was really weird to see Sherrard able to kind of flip the tables on Rock Ridge last night.
And down 11, and Rock Ridge had the ball.
Yeah.
A chance to go up 13. And, you know, and I'm saying 6 minutes, or maybe, I think it was maybe even five minutes.
6:13.
Is that when it was, yeah, when you listened back? But so that's, you're talking about 14 minutes of game clock against a team that has made it so challenging to score over the years, and you're able to overcome that. But you talk about a flurry, though, when you watch Carter Brown last night in that last, basically, I would say the last 14 minutes when he got on that roll and scored 19 points. That was a pretty, yeah, astounding and incredible performance by that kid.
There were a lot of great players in that game last night, but I mean, he was the best player on the floor in the second half. He was unstoppable.
He took over.
They couldn't stop him. They had no answer for him, no matter who they put on him. Brown, he'd score it from outside. He took it to the basket on basically anybody who tried to guard him, and just, I think I used the words, he willed them to win that game last night. He did. He's a really special athlete. He gets a lot of publicity, of course, for what he's able to do on the football field as an all-stater, but he's a terrific basketball player too. And just last night, you haven't really seen him in his high school career in basketball, at least, be like a number one scoring option, because Sherrard has had some really great players, obviously, with like Carton and Blackwell, and even a kid like, you know, Holland Anderson the past couple of years too, where he hasn't really needed to take on that role. But just seeing what he did last night, I mean, obviously for the rest of the year, that's huge, but like looking ahead to next year, because he is one of those kids that has like the Landon Bull effect, where like next year people are going to say that kid's still in high school, because of all the time he's played at the varsity level and everything. But man, I mean, looking at him as like a number one option next year, I really like what I saw with kind of their offense, what they were able to do running it through him, which is something they haven't really done all year.
Yeah, and you think about how many minutes, like in interscholastic competition, that kid has had a ball in his hand.
Oh, yeah.
Like with football, you know, with the position he plays there. And then even when he wasn't the quarterback, they threw to him like, you know, 100 times.
Yeah, and he still didn't throw to him enough. Yeah. He should have touched the ball every play. Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought too last night, just watching, and I do want to make a note of the crew last night that officiated. What was Gilmore's first name?
Todd
Gilmore, and Jim DuBois, and then Jake Scott.
Correct.
I thought great officiated game.
I really did too.
Because
it was consistent the whole game.
And in those type of games, you know, the way those teams lock down and defend and they play physical, I thought you really had to earn it in the paint. And maybe in other games you could call fouls like that. And that's why it's also always interesting how games are officiated, because they can dictate maybe outcome a little bit if they call it tight and make a lot of calls in the paint, or if they let them play. Who knows what happens, and who knows what the crew is and how they'll call things in the postseason. But I thought, man, that was such a top-notch officiating job last night. So I did want to recognize those three officials. And you know, you talk about the separation of a point, though, and that's the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat of how close that is. Because if you think Rock Ridge makes that shot at the end of
right.
the game, it's a difference of they just threw in a shot at the end of the game and won the game. And that's the beauty of these type of games, that it's so close, that there's so tremendous thrill of victory for Sherrard. And you know the agony of Rock Ridge by losing that game last night. And I told you, we talked about it, and I'll be honest, in this station, I told Ty, you and I'll say it, you know, off the you Rock, the Tigers can't get down 9 or 10 against Rock Ridge because they're going to get blown out. I've said that here. That's how wrong I am, because I didn't think, you know, you can do that against teams like that. And credit Girard, those kids battled back and somehow won that game last night. But to me, it, you know, they pushed the tempo. We talk about that. But to, it starts and stops defensively, and I just thought they're on the ball defense in the second half last night. I'm not a basketball expert by any stretch. Their recovery, though, on defense in terms of being in the half court and really contesting every Rock Ridge offensive possession. Conversely, I thought Rock Ridge did that in the first 16 minutes last night because I thought, man, they're just stopping the dribble from Girard last night, but I really noticed that.
Well, both teams are just great defensively. There's no question about it. And talking specifically about Girard, I mean, you look at the last, you know, couple of games for them, I guess, excluding the high-powered Quad City Christian Eagles on Monday. But, like, last Saturday, they beat Diet and held them to 41 points. And last night, of course, 40-39 over Rock Ridge. Well, like you said, I just think defensively both teams made it so hard to get to the basket. And it felt like really every shot that was made was like a tough shot. There weren't very many uncontested looks for anybody, whether it's at the rim or from the perimeter. It was, you know, 40-39. What is that? 79 points that were earned and, you know, hard fought for from start to finish in the game. And I thought even though it was low scoring, it's not like it was a bad offensive performance for either team. I think like, again, officially, we had Rock Ridge for 2 turnovers and Girard for 5, where it just was like such good team defense. It forced the possessions, it felt like, to be really long, which is another thing or another reason why it was impressive that Girard was able to rally from that 11-point deficit, because there, it didn't feel like were that many possessions really in the game, where when you're down 11, it's like you almost have to play perfect the rest of the way, because the way that both teams defended, it was like, you know, 60 seconds to 90 seconds per possession, it felt like a lot of the night. So, Girard, they really able to just kind of turn it on down the stretch. And like you said, the Carter Brown flurry was just really impressive and, quite a performance for him and the Tigers. And just, you can't understate how big of a win that is for the Girard program, I think, to sweep Rock Ridge. And I know, like, over the years, it's felt like sometimes, like on the Rock Ridge side, they can try to downplay the rivalry with Girard because they've dominated them for so long, but you can't anymore. And, you know, that's why I think it's so big. And you've seen over the past couple of years that shift because, well, one, you know, Girard has got a lot better and now they're competing in these games. But, like, even last year, the second game they played when it was a 1-point game, there wasn't as much, like, you know, friendly banter from the Rock Ridge side like there normally was. And then obviously this year, you know, I mean, what's kind of the body language of them walking off the floor? They were upset that they lost to Girard again. So I just think, you know, and it's a 1-point game, and the game earlier in the year was a 3-point game. But, you know, these games used to be like 30-point games every time. And now the fact that Girard has won 2 in a row and is really rolling and completely in the driver's seat of the conference now with a 2-game lead with 4 games to play, Girard will get the top seed in the subsectional now too. I mean, they've set themselves up, you know, for it well in terms of the rest of the year, and with Rock Ridge's loss, now you look at what they're going to have to try to do in the postseason. Most likely they're going to be faced with playing a regional championship game on the road at Macomb, and that is not something I would want to do.
Well, no, and because Macomb defends.
Yeah.
And they want to play games in the 30s. Yeah. That's their MO and their style of play. And I just thought, and I think we'll have the broadcast maybe available later today on our podcast.
It is right now, but don't listen until the end of Sportsline. That's our rule.
But and what I loved last night in some of the moments of interscholastic athletics, so we talked to Carter Brown right after the game last night. So the horn sounds, they go through the handshake line. And you always love those type of moments because kids are still kind of dazed at that time where they're kind of processing, you know, what just happened. And I thought, you know, his description of it was just perfect because it was such an in-the-moment conversation. And I just love those so much. So and again, just such an impressive performance by him. Last night where he took over, and I think I called it when I was talking to him, I said, what happened with this Carter Brown explosion. And then even Coach Johnson on the post game, you know, you're still trying to process what went on. And I thought that was great. And you were talking about kind of position of the program. And I know when I watch a lot of JV games, I'm not really interested in what the result or the score is, but I like to watch kind of the play, like the basketball skill set. And I was watching a couple of kids from Sherrard last night that they still have kind of, you know, junior high or immature type of bodies, right? Yeah. But you see their skill level, their basketball skill level is pretty good. And I'm like, there was a couple of kids I'm watching on that team that I'm not going to say they're like going to be Rylan Carton, but I remember when Rylan Carton came to Sherrard and was like a JV player, didn't have the varsity basketball body yet, but had the skill set. I'm like, that kid's got some skill. And there's a couple kids I watch Sherrard JV. I'm like, man, they got some kids in this program that are still coming through. And the other thing that I love, and I said it last night on the post game, and I've noticed it twice this year. So I love the fact that when they were over at Sherrard at the holiday tournament, where their fans kind of hang around, and so their kids go into the locker room and there's a celebration, of course, especially last night, which is emotional victory. But this weird thing where, and I love it, and I hope they never stop doing it, because I think there's some beauty in it, where then the kids go back in the locker room, get dressed, come back out, and there's all these people still hanging around because they're excited about what happened. And then they get another applaud when they're coming out and leaving. And I just kind of love how they're savoring that experience. So never stop doing that, because I think that matters to being part of something.
Well, and another thing, kind of going off of what you just talked about there, watching like the development of players in the Sherrard program, I think that's something they've really done a great job in recently. Like when you look at, you know, some of these kids that are contributing, obviously Rylan Carton is a great player and has a lot of natural ability, but to see his growth, you know, the past 3 years in that program, like same thing with James Blackwell, you always saw the athleticism he had when he was younger, but just the growth of becoming a complete basketball player, and like Carter Brown and Ryder Veranda and like Aiden Taranas, I think, gives them such great minutes. And the Bender kid, we had him on this week, and Brody Bender, he plays his role perfectly. And like even a kid like Caden Kelly, who comes off the bench, understands his role. So talking about that, like, I just think them developing those kids, and Coach Johnson said this in one of our, I think, post-game interviews this year. He's like, in our program, we don't want to play freshmen and sophomores at the varsity level. We want to develop our kids and have juniors and seniors play varsity basketball every year. And I think that's so important. And it gives you an advantage when you can do that, because there's such a difference between, you know, a senior kid playing at 17 or 18 years old versus a sophomore kid at 15 and 16. And that's where with Sherrard, I like the group they have, because they're all juniors and seniors. They're older, you know, they're stronger, they're more mature, they're faster. And that's why I just think that's the way you have to do it. And with what they've been able to do, like tapping into the youth programs, how many kids they have out for basketball in that district. I mean, I just think that's a program that from now for a long time is going to be at least solid, just with the quantity of kids they have that are interested in basketball. And I know Coach Johnson deserves, I mean, a ton of credit for that, because they've really got a great vibe going on over there. And just the year this year at the varsity level has just kind of been this magical run where they keep having these great rallies to come back and win, and top 10 in the state for the first time in a really long time. And they're probably going to have a kid who I think is a first team All-Stater for the first time in a long time over there too. So it just has been a fun year in that program, man. The trajectory of it, they are moving in the right direction, that's for sure.
Well, in the, you know, the purest form of flattery is copy or imitation. And I would advise many of these programs, and I'm speaking just as it relates to basketball, but you can do it for any sport, is you have the kickoff night that they're doing with basketball, where they have all their youth teams come in and play, which is such a cool experience. Yeah. And then they take their show, you know, especially in these rural areas where districts are large geographically, they take their show on the road in the summer and do these park events. And even if you're not having a kid that plays basketball, you still see, hey, this dude's coming to Matherville, or this dude's coming to Viola, or this dude's
Coin
coming
Center.
To and playing. And he wants to bring this outreach to the district. I love that. I think that's just a great idea. And it's more just enjoyment than just really, right. You know, basketball skill. It's basically growing the interest in the program. And that's what you see with people at the game or people that are on board and being part of something. Because he's making those people be part of something, because he's taking and engaging community to get involved in sports. It takes work to do that in today's environment.
And that's something he said too. I remember talking about that with him over the summer. Was he said, you know, we know that not every single one of these kids that comes to camp or that's playing in fourth grade or is showing up to play with us in the park in New Windsor or Viola or Sherrard or wherever is going to keep playing basketball. But the point of it is to give everybody a positive experience with our program. So even if they don't continue to play and get involved in other things, they still want to come to the games and cheer for us and, you know, root for us and scream and yell for us. And like you saw last night, I mean, the crowd Sherrard had, they had more fans there than Rock Ridge on the road. They had more students there than Rock Ridge on the road. And that's what they've been able to do, is build this kind of community aspect. And just the final play, I thought, was just such a great, like, scene for Sherrard, because you have what their students storm onto the floor. There's like, you know, the kids on the bench run. There's like this mob at midcourt. And my favorite part is it was the ball out after the last shot went off the rim and bounced to the corner. It like was bouncing towards the corner as time was expiring. So there was like, you know, a second left on the clock. And I think it was James Blackwell's over there. He just like swung and like with his fist just hit the ball into the upper deck. And it was just such a great scene, I think, with like all that purple on the floor over there for just what that program has been through. And we talked about this, Coach Johnson too. They've had a lot of, you know, uncompetitive seasons in the last like 15 years at Sherrard and boys basketball. And that community and district has been waiting a long time for a year like this. And they've been good the last 2 years too. But man, it's just been kind of fun to see that follow and grow. And they've had, you know, tremendous crowds all year long. And next Friday for them should be fun. They get Orient at home, who's playing really well too. And that's always a big house. So I guess no rest, right, if the Chargers come into town next week.
Yeah, no question about that. But getting back to, like, the last 10-point, was it 10.6 on the clock?
11.3.
And the inbound was baseline under the Rock Ridge basket. And the way I was doing sidelines last night, the first and third quarter I was at the end of the Sherrard bench. Second and fourth quarter I was at the end of the Rock Ridge bench. And watching that last 11.3 seconds, I'm like, man, is the horn going to sound?
I know.
Does it seem like it took forever? And then even like if you're leading by one, the agony of waiting for the horn to sound. And then if you're trailing by one, you're thinking, can one of those shots go in? And I thought the last one Landon Bull threw up, because it reminded me of the Alito-Westmore game in 90. To the regional semifinals where Pat Lower threw in that shot. I thought one of the kids after the scramble's going to throw in the shot as time expires. And the big question is going to be, was there enough time on the clock? But I wanted to say a couple things about Rock Ridge too, because, you know, like I said, the separation of that game was a point last night. And a couple things that I noticed that I like, I think, you know, Landon Wheatley, last night offensively attacking.
Yeah, he was really good last night.
He had
night.
A great game, and I think Rock Ridge is going to need more of that, because it's a toss-up game if they play for a third time with a sectional title, but a lot has to happen before that. And then, you know, it's just one of those nights, again, and it's probably happened just two times in his career, where Caleb Kunico just missed shots that were open that he normally makes. Now, he did hit a big shot last night to tie the game when Sherrard got up three and hit a three to tie the game. But he missed some open looks that were kind of a different that maybe were the difference. And then I think that Rock Ridge last night we've expected, and I think you can't call him a secret weapon anymore with his production, that the Richard kids had such a great season. And, you know, I thought last night Sherrard did a good job maybe neutralizing him, or he didn't have much of an impact in this game that he may have had in the first game. And then, you know, more production from Baylen Lehmans. Now, I did, you know, the one kid I think that gives them kind of a spark, maybe doesn't score much, I like how Chase Wheatley plays when he gets in the game.
I thought the play he made in the fourth quarter, Rock Ridge had a possession where they were down one with like 4 or so minutes left. They missed a shot. and Sherrard got the defensive rebound. I think Carton had it. And Chase Wheatley kind of dug from behind him and stole the ball, and then Rockridge took a timeout. And I think I even said on a broadcast, I'm like, if Rockridge wins this game, that's the play of the game. Because they were, Sherrard was going to have the ball with a lead for the first time in a long time. And then Rockridge, I think, missed a shot, got an offensive rebound, and missed three shots basically on one possession, which is rare for them. But it just is weird because we've grown so accustomed to seeing Rockridge just deliver the knockout punch every time they have the opportunity. And it just has been kind of strange watching them, you know, last night, not able to put Sherrard away. And I know we've talked a lot about Sherrard, but like Rockridge is, of course, a great team too, where I think both of these teams have the potential and talent to like get to the Final Four. I really do. And I think there's a great possibility that they'll play for a sectional championship in a few weeks, which would be just bonkers. But
and it'd be at Sherrard.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It'd be great. But yeah, like Rockridge, I mean, you lose to Sherrard. It's not like the season's over. I mean, it's January 25th now. But still, I mean, it means something, I think, to lose to them twice. Because when you come into the season winning 35 conference games in a row and 13 in a row against Sherrard, all of a sudden now you're, you know, behind in the conference race and you need like a miracle to get back into the race to try to win the conference. It's different. It's a different type feel. But still, I mean, there's still a possibility for them to do really great things the rest of the year.
It's stinging if you lose to the local rival twice. I mean, that stinks, and they're close games. But I wanted to say too, you mentioned the one play Chase Wheatley made, but then in the first half he had a huge offensive rebound that kept the play alive, and they didn't score on the possession. But I want to say too, and it takes a performance like, you know, what Carter Brown did to say, well, what about Landon Bull? And Landon Bull just had another unbelievable performance last night, and I was talking to, you know, his dad kind of before the game. And I said, well, what's the process now with, you know, because he was such a talented football player, can play at the next level there. But now, you know, what he's been accomplishing again this year, basketball-wise, he's getting some looks there. So he's that type of athlete that has that decision to make. But I tell you, Landon Bull, there's a lot of great players that if, as Toby Whiteman always say, you can't just, you know, put on that. It's just automatically a magic jersey you put on. You got to work. But I'm telling you, Landon Bull is in the conversation for one of the best players ever in that school in basketball. He is such a smooth player. I don't know if it's just his body type, but he's so deceivingly quick.
Yeah,
and
his vision,
smooth. Yeah, he's just a very smooth player that makes it look easy. And I know it isn't, but he's really been a pleasure to watch play basketball for 4 years. Just tremendous player, and I like he plays with a little moxie and flair, and I love that about him because you should. That's the way it is. You should enjoy playing, and that's why I kind of liked that last night where it was mano a mano against these two teams that are going. All in good, you know, all in good, the name of interscholastic athletic competition. But, you know, it took a performance from Carter Brown to make us forget a little bit about what Landon Bull did, but just another huge night for him too.
So he crossed the 1500 career point mark last night. And like you said, it's every part of his game. He just is so great scoring. He's a great rebounder and, it just feels like we still underrate him because we don't talk about him as much because it just is expected that he's just going to go out there and, you know, have a double-double every single game with like five assists to go along with it. But I think I really like kind of the style they've changed a little bit where he started handling the ball more for them, where when he gets a defensive rebound, he just pushes it up the floor and it just is so hard to stop him when he gets downhill. He, like you said, he's deceivingly quick. He's strong. And he's so skilled in terms of, you know, getting to the basket in a lot of different ways. He handles the ball so well and just like some of his low post moves where he pivots and gets to the spot. He just is, like you said, a joy to watch play the game. And he's, I mean, like you said, a great high school basketball player. Definitely one of the best players that program has ever had in terms of 4 years of just great play on four great teams he's been a part of. You know, he's been great to watch, and it's sad that, you know, what, there's a month and a half left of seeing him play. But, man, he's been a joy for sure, and last night was just another one of those great performances. Him and Rylan Carton are similar in that way, where Bull's done it for 4 years, but, like, they just never have an off night. You know, they just bring it no matter who they play. They bring it every single game, and that's tough to do when the other team, you know, every time Rockridge plays, the other team says, number one that we got to do is stop number 34, and no one ever can do it. So he deserves a lot of credit. He's just a heck of a player, man.
Can I say something else about last night that I loved for doing this? So I think one of the great things, like when you have these type of games and, you know, everybody kind of shows up, you know, so the game is the main thing, right? I love that. And we for me, you know, like when two local teams play, it's all for me. It's all about, like, I want it to come down to the last possession.
Me too.
You want it to live up to whatever. And last night was the perfect storm for that. You know, whoever wins, they win. But you want that. But I just think about, you know, how cool it was last night. So you get there, and I think about, like, all the conversations just you have. Because I was jotting down, like, of course, Coach Cook, Tom Hassan, you know, some of the people I ran into, Jansen Bender, Eric Hutchins. Mike Jones' dad, who's been a part of the station legacy for so long when Mike played. So great to see Coach Graves. Had a great conversation with him and Daphne last night. And because Coach Graves, if you didn't know, the funny thing is, during the Illini bowl game, he went to that game against South Carolina. And then he was like in a perfect shot. They got him on the broadcast.
They isolated, like, just him on ESPN for like 3 seconds.
With an old school Illini football helmet t-shirt on, and it was great to listen to him. And then I saw Lori and Steve Frakes there last night, Carson's mom. Now they kind of root for Sherrard a little bit because Andrew Weiler's there, their son-in-law. It was good to see Andrew Weiler there. So for me, doing it for so long, it's just kind of really cool to be there and talk about that. And from a parent standpoint, you know, like watching, and you only understand this if you've had kids play, kind of the agony of when you're a parent and you're watching kids playing in that type of close game. And I, you know, just kind of watching Nick Bull a little bit, and then kind of Jansen Bender, you know, when their kids are playing, and it's such a hotly contested game, and there's just this anxiousness. You can kind of see it in the face. It's just, you know, like I said, it was, you saw all of that last night. It was just such a great setting and a great environment. And, you know, be interesting, and it'd be awesome if they would play again in a sectional title game over at Sherrard. So a couple of other things now. Later today, we'll have matinee basketball, Mercer County Girls in action against United. Man, so talking about some sports headlines from this week, Mercer County got a really nice win in girls basketball at Monmouth-Roseville. So momentum opportunity for them. They've had some nice wins here late in the year. They won at Illini West a couple of weeks ago. And then let's see, other games last night in the league. Mercer County at home, they fall to Orion. Did you tell me or Terry say
70-56?
The Owens kid had 18 in the first quarter.
He had 18 in the first.
But I saw in the box score the Andreessen kid is back playing. Did he have 21?
I think so. I don't have the book. So, but yeah.
You know, so nice.
I don't know if that was like in. I don't know how the game went. I don't know if it was like, you know, a 21 and a blowout. I don't know what the spread was the whole game. I just saw the final score was 70-56.
But at least they get some kids healthy back. Like he's been gone all year, right? Yeah. Just coming back. And then who won the Riverdale Monmouth
Riverdale by 16, I think.
Oh, down at the shoebox.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. So does Rockridge and Sherrard, they still have Riverdale left, right?
This was the first time playing everybody's the second
yeah,
time.
Yeah, so they
have everybody else.
So those still are trap games to me, Riverdale and especially Orion and even Monmouth Roseville if you got to play down there.
Yeah, right.
So.
New Mercer County football coach.
Now, hopefully, you know, we knew there'd be a lot of stuff this weekend. Hopefully we'll have Fred Lucas on next week, right?
There's too much going on with the epic battle between the Tigers and the Rockets last night.
So it was hilarious, though. So the day after he was hired, I had a memory that came up on my Facebook memories, and it was from Derek Dixon, who, of course, is a Westmore grad, and he was in the era of the Westwood Wolfpack, which was the Yorkwood-Westmore co-op
Good Lord.
That Coach Lucas was the head coach, and he had a T-shirt And he took a screenshot, and it was on my memories from like 10 years
ago.
What
was the travel like for that co-op?
I can't. Oh, my God. And that's something we can talk to Fred about. So, yeah, from, you know, Little York to...
Joy.
To Joy.
Well, and then, like, when you talk about the district, like, to Eliza.
Yeah, and then he coached the Roseville-Yorkwood co-op, I think. And because he I think he coached with Lyle Pierce. And then
what
the
was
other...
their nickname? Roseville-Yorkwood. Do you know?
Man.
I don't
know. It might have been the Bearcats.
Okay, I just was curious.
But then the other connection for Coach Lucas, I know he grew up in McDonough County, and he played for former Aledo head coach Bill McCarty at Northwestern Scioto, I believe, back in the late 1980s, so that he has that connection. And then you have the story, he coached at United, and then I think a lot of people don't realize he was a head girls basketball coach at United for several years.
I did not know that.
So... we'll talk to him hopefully next week. It was funny because I talked to Coach Graves a little bit about, you know, scheduling football, and basically it's just the same schedule next year. But if you were home in 2024 against, for example, like Princeton, you're at Princeton next year.
Right.
So same exact schedule. So anyway, you know, a lot of fun conversations when you get back to the Sherrod Rockbridge, you know, the fans that were there. And I think Coach Bazzali, you know, he had a chance to talk to him before the game. It was just kind of fun. And then Coach Hutton was there last night. I know he was
Rusty
soaking
Blunkett
in.
Was there. Yeah, it was great when Coach Hutton walked in, man.
Yeah, because he was basically kind of standing up there the whole
when he left, we were like at a commercial in the post game, and he walked by him and he's, boy, that was an impressive second half for Carter Brown. I'm like, yeah, that's an understatement, I think. But
well, and the other thing, and I said it on the broadcast last night, I think, you know, kind of how the tempo changed in the second half for Sherrod, and you mentioned the turnovers, and I thought even in that third, it was either the third or the fourth quarter when it was like a possession game where Sherrod had two turnovers in a row.
It was in the fourth, like under 4 minutes
yeah,
to play.
Yeah, I'm like, you still got to push the tempo.
And the thing I love about games like that is the agony of each play, because that was they were up one, and they had just turned over and then got the stop, and Carton got a rebound, and he tried to throw an outlet pass to Blackwell on the run where he would have had a layup the other way, and it was just like fingertips out of his reach. And the ball kind of whizzed past him. And from my angle, like, the ball goes past, and in the background from where the ball went past Blackwell, you saw, like, every person on the Sherrod side on their bench and behind it just, like, throw their head back because they just know every single bounce, play, basket, shot, turnover mattered so much in that game last night. And that's what makes games like that so fun, is it's 32 minutes of, you know, high drama. Every single play that happens matters, and that's what it was last night.
Yeah, I thought, too, the other thing I like about those big, not even big broadcasts, how many people that just reach out that are listening that can't be at the game. And I thought, you know, it's like a who's who was listening last night, and I thought it was the great text from Wayne Bennett when he was talking about his connections of knowing the kid's parents,
yeah.
Not necessarily the kids, but telling us how the connection with the kid was. But he had he sent me a text this morning about us, you know, listening to Sportsline, and I thought it was so hilarious with the legacy of the station and him knowing, like, being born and raised here. He's like today's mystery guest, B. Daniels. That's like some WRMJ deep core history there. So I don't know. Speaking of Sherrod, they have Orion Friday. Who do the Rockets have? Who's on their schedule?
Riverdale.
Those are two. And Riverdale's always kind of been a little bit of a thorn.
Yeah,
in
they have been.
Because I think that's their big rivalry in this league. And in, I think football and basketball, that's the kind of the team they want to, I don't know if it's a Rock Island County thing. Or what, but yeah, those are two intriguing games coming up Friday.
Should be. I think Monday we have boys. Mercer County plays Farmington, which should be a pretty good game, I think. The rest of the week, I don't know off the top of my head. I think we have Rock Ridge and Mercer County girls on Thursday. Rock Ridge, Mercer County girls Thursday, which should be a pretty good game, I would think.
So you say Farmington, that brings up a funny thing of the other conversations I had. So I was talking to, Colin Schweigen's dad last night. He was there, and I said, man, I said, I'm over here, and I said, I was thinking about coming in, and I said, I see the football field, and I was like, man, it was just a couple weeks ago we were doing Farmington Rockridge playoff game, and Mischwagen said, "Oh, don't mention Farmington."
Yeah, that was agonizing. Oh my God!
I said, "My Nikes that I wore that day are still muddy. I haven't been able to clean them off. I still think of that when I look at those shoes." But anyway, it's just, you know, the high drama last night was just one of those great games, one of those great regular season games. That was kind of an instant classic. Last night.
Let's all hope they play on the first Friday of March in at Harry Hunt Gymnasium for a trip to the Elite Eight on the line. That'd be awesome.
And so we said it last night. I think the right, correct rankings for high school basketball are from Aaron Britton at Nesto Hoop. So he had them 9 and 10. We could debate a little bit that maybe they could be higher, but who knows? So I think more and more now you have to track a little bit more kind of what's going on with that other subsectional side and the talent. And I think, did you say it last week on the air or did you say it here in the office that Peoria Notre Dame got a nice win this week over somebody, right? Who did they beat? They got everybody back.
That might have been, I think they beat Bloomington Central Catholic.
Yeah, that's an...
Because they, when we saw them earlier in the year when they played Rock Ridge, they had their top three guards were all... hurt.
Yeah,
at that
they were
point.
All on the street clothes on the end of the bench.
So they had a couple of nice like sophomore pieces that played that day, and I remember saying like I thought once they got everybody back they'd be a pretty solid group. So yeah, they're kind of starting to move in the right direction, and obviously though the top team over in the other subsectional is Manual, of course.
Well, yeah, because I look at the four teams that are going to probably factor in. It's got to be Bloomington Central Catholic, El Paso Gridley, Peoria Notre Dame and Peoria Manual, and then you know
and U-High.
Yeah, oh that's right, and U-High. And then you think about El Paso Gridley, they're still really good, and their best player moved to Metamora in the offseason.
I'm sure he moved.
and is playing there. So I, you know, that's something that, you know, I'm going to pay a little closer attention to over the next couple of weeks, because two of those five teams you just mentioned, Bloomington Central Catholic, El Paso Gridley, Peoria Notre Dame, Peoria Manual, or U-High, are going to be playing over in lower Rock Island County. Because I remember back in the day, I think in the Eric Lawson era, Sherrard beat U-High at the State Farm Classic, maybe for the championship, and former Moline coach Cal Hubbard was the head coach of U-High back in the day. That's like, and I remember John Hoshut, I think, was broadcasting that game for us way back.
Didn't they play them at State?
Or maybe it was State.
They
lost
to him, I think. That's what Eric told me. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. And I think they may have played him at the State Farm Classic, too, back in the day. Because Sherrard won that in that era. They won the State Farm Classic.
Yeah, that's impressive.
One year. So, anyway. That's all I got. I don't know if there's anything else we need to talk about. Bob Mitten's on the program today. Always great to catch up with him.
And we got the chance to talk to Bill Breeden this week, too. Yeah, yesterday. So, 2 days. He should have just done the interview.
Yeah, he probably should have. And then I was telling you about Bob Mitten, you know, the strange combination for him. He was the head wrestling coach at Orion, and then for several years, he was the defensive coordinator, kind of in the heyday in the early to mid-90s with Rock Ridge football with the late, great Rick Amey, and he was the defensive coordinator. And they would like, it seemed like every down, they'd just bring 11. They play every time.
They were playing Madden.
Yeah, they were just like, they had a number of horses back in the day. But, you know, you'll hear the conversation with him. You know, he talks a little bit about what's different between today and back then, and especially in the sport of wrestling that has changed so much. And he talked a little bit about, you know, participation numbers and how that's become a challenge. But you'll listen, Bob Mitten will sort that out for us when we talk to him here coming up on Sportsline.
All right, we can talk to him, and we've got the Rockridge Sherrard WRMJ broadcast last night. It's on our WRMJ Sports podcast feed right now if you want to listen to that today or tomorrow or whenever in 10 years, 15 years down the line to relive a classic game. Mm-hmm. That was a lot of fun last night. So, All right.
We'll take a break. This is the WRMJ Sports Line from the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studio in downtown Toledo. Bob Mitten coming up next.
If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale Jones of Merritt Auctions. The Merritt Auctions team have over 100 years of combined experience in auctions and real estate to help you gain full exposure to the market and achieve maximum return on your assets. Merritt Auctions specializes in live auctions, timed online-only auctions, and virtual online auctions. For a no-obligation consultation to sell your land or machinery, call Dale Jones today.
$15.29, I'm here.
Hi, I'm Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. Give me a call at 309-299-6400.
Are you ready for your teen to get their license? At Country Financial, they know it's scary when you see your kids back out of the driveway for the first time. If you know your young driver has the proper protection from Country Financial, it's a little easier. Contact your local Country Financial representative to chat about car insurance today.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Policies issued by Country Mutual, Country Preferred, and Country Casualty Insurance Company, Bloomington, Illinois.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands of the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
Step into style and comfort at 6140 Run in Galesburg. If you need new footwear, 6140 Run has just the right fit. Check out their quality brands for fitness, Hoka, Saucony, and Brooks, for just hanging out, Hey Dude and Birkenstock, and even for work, Red Wing and Wolverine. Whether you're hitting the trails, taking a stroll, or just kicking back, 6140 Run has you covered. Stop by their location at 185 Main Street in Galesburg and find your perfect pair today.
Jim Taylor back on WRMJ, WRMJ.com. Great to visit with Bob Mitten. That's right, folks. It's the Bob Mitten weekend. Why, you ask? The Bob Mitten Invitational Wrestling Tournament. 42 years for this great event. I was thinking about it today, Coach. Do you remember? So it'd be like 1982. Do you remember the first time you did this tournament over there?
You know, not really, because it kind of changes a little bit every year, you know, is the people you may have and not have anymore, and quality of wrestlers, and, you know, everything that goes along with it. I just try to stay ahead of the game.
That's good advice. So I was thinking, too, you know, how we say time flies. I was thinking about you a couple weeks ago. I was talking to Steve Amy during the weekend of the pit. And I said, let's see, let me do the math real quick. 1999 graduate, you've been out of school 25 years. Can you believe Steve Amy has been out of high school for 25 years? That makes Bob Mitten an old man, doesn't it?
I was just going to say, not old. I tell everybody, I passed that. I'm ancient.
All right, but a lot of memories when I mentioned the Amy family. It's funny, as we're recording this interview on a Friday, and about like 35 minutes ago, Bill Breeden just walked out of the WMG offices after a conversation. Those names mean a lot to you, don't they? Bill Breeden, and then when I mentioned the Amy name, right?
Oh, yeah. It's been hard. I still miss old Rick, you know. It's kind of like the dynamic duo with him and I, and then you add Bill into that bunch with us and that, and we had some really good times, man. It was kind of like always when we knew we were facing each other, we sharpened our teeth.
Yeah, we all miss Rick Amy. He's impacted a lot of us, and I know I think about him quite often when I think of, just, you know, when I say the words Rock Ridge Rockets, I'll always think of, that's one of the first people I think of is Rick Amy. All right, so tell us a little bit about, you know, kind of the makeup of this tournament and being part of it. I think 24 teams in the field this weekend. And what about kind of, you know, really the last tournament of the year? That's pretty special, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I tell everybody, you know, like coming into this one here, this is a spot where they kind of want to fine-tune themselves and that and get ready for the state series. And as usual, like I had mentioned even last year, that I think the number of quality has gone down a little bit, but every team here has some really good kids, though, that'll make it interesting. And there's some weights here I think are pretty knockdown drag out. one mistake and you could be out of the medal round. So I look forward to some good matches in that, you know, with the addition of Byron and Rock Falls last year. They bring in some quality in that. Well, Byron snuck it out and beat Riverdale out last year to win it, and I look for another knockdown drag out this year.
And it's nice that you get 24 teams in the field. And, you know, it's interesting. So if you look back, you know, 42 years ago, head coach of the wrestling program. Now, I'm not going to say you're an impartial observer because the tournament is named after you. But what, you help organize it. How do you, like, approach the weekend? You used to be the head wrestling coach back in the day at Orion. Now your name's on the event. Is it just a thing for you where you just like to sit back and, hey, I want to watch some kids get on the mat and have some good matches?
Well, first off, I'm just happy it's not a memorial, so that's probably first. But my big thing is now, after 42 years, and like I said, every year we've tried to step up, whether it, it used to be you had to have runners and individuals doing a lot of paperwork, and in today's technology, Cripes, we got those scoreboards all up, and stuff comes right from the head table to the mats, and things like that have a big change in how you operate. And to be honest, I talked to Bill about this just about a week ago, that, it's getting time where, I'm growing a little thin, there in the effort, that, and I think it's about time to pass the torch after 42 years of running it.
So I'm just curious, and I ask a lot of people that have been, a head coach for a long time, is it hard to just sit back and watch, because especially in a sport, like wrestling, where technique is such a big thing, it's hard to not get invested so much in it because you've done it for so long. I mean, how do you watch it, I guess, when you're not a coach?
Well, that's a good question, because I watch some of the things. What's hard is to, everybody has their own way of coaching and that, different style or what you want to learn and stuff. And it's kind of hard, to watch some of the kids. It's not the same as I would teach, but it's not that it's wrong. It's just times change, and that gets a little tough. But other than that, I got to be honest, I just talked to the wife about a week ago too, that I said, I'm ready just to observe.
All right. But it's neat though, that you're building a legacy over there, and that means people think this is important, that you've had a wrestling tournament for 42 years, right? This is the 42nd year for this. Now they call it the Bob Mitten Invitational.
Correct.
You want to stay in this thing though, right? I mean, this is pretty important to see Orion say, hey, we want to do this wrestling tournament end of the year. We've done this. It's an important weekend leading up to kind of postseason wrestling. What about, just the tradition of having this thing for 42 years? That's pretty cool, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And like I said, we've tried to strengthen it every year. I think when we first started, I think there was 8 and 14, and it kind of grew in that. And we'd like to get one of the issues that not just wrestling, but a lot of the sports are facing right now, Jim, is the fact that nobody wants to work, or nobody wants to do it. The gaming and technology that way has drawn a lot of kids away from the sports. And I look at that like, trying to get people involved. So a lot of these teams are not filling out their lineups anymore because they just don't have the numbers. And like I said, it's happening in all sports.
Yeah, no question about it. No question about it. And we could talk about that forever and ever and ever and probably not reach a solution. But when you look at kind of, this tournament this weekend and the different things that you've looked at, I mean, are there certain weight classes that kind of stand out to you, or certain teams that you want to see, this weekend with this tournament?
Well, it's like I said, Byron's one of the ones that, I've been a big addition, and I think they're pretty strong. If I was going to try to say somebody, I'm really interested to see Kewaunee. They've got a well-rounded team, and I don't, if my memory serves me correct, they've never placed here. And I think they have a real decent shot of winning it this year. So, I mean, that's real good for Kiwani. He's done a good job over there coaching that. But, and then here again, you know, I talk about it. We have one of your own over there in Zach Nelson, you know, taking the program over here, and he's working real hard. You know, I explained to him, you know, it's not my program anymore. It's his. He's going to have to build it and the way he wants it. So I'm looking forward to seeing how they're going to look towards the end of the year here also.
I know you mentioned, you know, we look at participation numbers and kids doing whatever or not doing whatever. And I know when you look at wrestling, you want 14 weight slots filled. But then on top of that, you want those kids challenged in the wrestling room where they have a workout partner. So I know numbers is an issue. And I'm just curious, like, talking to a person that's been around wrestling for as long as you have, is there anything else that can be done to help the sport, or do you see like any changes that need to be made from a governance standpoint with the IHSA that could help this sport at all, you think? So I guess long story short, I'm saying if Bob Mitten, God forbid, was in charge, what would he do?
Now, don't get me in trouble here, but I think if you're going to ask me, I think it's got to start with the administration in the school systems and that. And I don't know exactly how it would go, but I think they need to sit down, because what I really see is hurting a lot of the programs are everybody wants to go 12 months of the year. And so it's my program, my program, my program. The coaches don't work real well together in a lot of different areas. And I know I talked to Bill about this. We talked a lot about this, and so did Rick and I, that we always felt like get involved in other sports. Well, round your athletes. You know, don't say, I want you just wrestling, wrestling, wrestling. They need to get involved in other sports. But, you know, you got volleyball doing all these clubs and stuff now, so it hurts the basketball, girls' basketball teams. You know, the same thing. You got guys right now that are not looking so much at wrestling or basketball. They're already looking at track and that type of baseball, you know, indoor and that. So I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that how many of these kids are really going to go on and be something? Let them enjoy their sports while they're in high school. But unless you get the administrations in the different schools to step up and say, hey, you can't, in season's got to come first, especially in small schools like Orion.
Yeah,
we don't have the athletes.
Yeah, and I know that's that is the million-dollar question, is how you deal with the off-season sport impeding with the in-season sport, and then on top of that, you have the club sport issue that's outside of the school that you're also dealing with. Now, the other thing I was thinking about with you too, and I was talking, you know, about this with Steve Amy over at Princeton, because they have, I can't remember how many kids he told me in terms of girls' high school wrestling they have at Princeton now. So it's really growing there. Have you noticed? Do you think that's an opportunity? What have you noticed about? And I think Sherrard has three or four kids that are doing a good job with girls' wrestling. Have you had a chance to kind of see that? And do you think there's some opportunity for growth with some of our area schools?
I don't know. You know, you look at Geneseo, and they got a heck of a good team, and I thought they had like 30-some girls, you know, so it's kind of depends on the area and whatnot, but I guess I'm going to say two things on this. One is, like I said, you know, we already got basketball and that, and then you got the club volleyball fighting them and whatnot, and then you put in the wrestling, when you're a small school, it just cuts down more. And the other thing on that is, it's kind of changing things from the standpoint of, you know, I know there's a lot of guys that would like to do boys volleyball, you know, but mm-hmm. they don't have it. It's the same thing here. Just because the guys have it don't mean the girls have it. So I'm kind of mixed on the whole feeling of it, but, I'll use Orion example here again. You know, we're just right around 300 as far as the school, and you realize we only have two less sports than what Moline has.
Wow.
And when you break that down, I'm sorry, but you know, you don't have the bodies.
Yeah, math don't lie, as they say. All right, so I got one. Can you get me a T-shirt this weekend or not? I want a Bob Mitten Invitational T-shirt, extra large.
I'll see what I can do. What size?
Extra large. I'd like, and I want you to sign it with a Sharpie because I think it's important that your name's on it. So, well, I love it. You know, 42 years, that's an impressive legacy. I hope they can sustain that, keep that thing going. And, your name is deserving to be on that tournament's name. So I want you to know that. I think that's awesome. And hey, settle down and just sit back, Bob Mitten, and you enjoy quality wrestling this weekend, right? And thanks for coming on the air with us today.
That's the big thing. It's like I said, once I get done with all this and it starts running, it pretty much runs itself.
All right. You enjoy the weekend, sir. Thanks for coming on the air with us.
Well, thanks for having me, Jim. You take care.
You're listening to WRMJ.
If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale Jones of Merritt Auctions. The Merritt Auctions team have over 100 years of combined experience in auctions and real estate to help you gain full exposure to the market and achieve maximum return on your assets. Merritt Auctions specializes in live auctions, timed online-only auctions, and virtual online auctions. For a no-obligation consultation to sell your land or machinery, call Dale Jones today.
$15.29 by the here.
Hi, I'm Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. Give me a call at 309-299-6400.
You finally have your dream home. Now you need the right insurance to protect it, because when it comes time to file a claim, you don't want any surprises. Talk to a Country Financial representative to find out if you have the right protection. They can help you understand your options and select coverages to meet your needs.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Home insurance policies issued by Country Mutual Insurance Company, Country Casualty Insurance Company, or Country Preferred Insurance Company, Bloomington, Illinois.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands in the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
Step into style and comfort at 6140 Run in Galesburg. If you need new footwear, 6140 Run has just the right fit. Check out their quality brands for fitness, Hoka, Saucony, and Brooks, for just hanging out, Hey Dude and Birkenstock, and even for work, Red Wing and Wolverine. Whether you're hitting the trails, taking a stroll, or just kicking back, 6140 Run has you covered. Stop by their location at 185 Main Street in Galesburg and find your perfect pair today.
This is Jim Taylor at WRMJ Radio in Aledo. He's Brian Roush at WCCI Radio in Savannah. This is Jim and Brian talking high school sports on the radio. And I see kind of earlier this week, Brian Roush, that the Illinois Eight-Man Football Association, they're starting to release some of the schedules for the fall of 2025 season. I know the 2024 season, I think, ended with 30 teams. And to be quite honest, I haven't heard a lot of talk about additional schools or teams or co-ops going to eight-man. Have we kind of plateaued? Are you hearing much talk about additional eight-man teams?
You know, we may have. I don't hear much about it either up here, and I know that, you know, it is an option for schools, and you would think that there are some schools here with enrollment sizes that would, you know, really probably benefit from moving over to eight-man, but they don't really want to do that. They still want to be an 11-man, and some of those schools are still very competitive. And I know that they realigned a little bit, because I was talking to the West Carroll coach the other night, and they're playing a couple of different opponents, West Central and West Prairie. And as you say, the schedule is out. They haven't set, you know, days and times yet, so they just know which week the games are. And he said he was kind of pushing towards more Saturday games just because of a couple of those trips being long ones.
And I think, too, and maybe the reason some schools or co-ops are hesitant to move forward with eight-man football, I don't know if they want to wait till, you know, the IHSA is serving as, you know, the administrative body, because, again, still Illinois eight-man football operates independently of the IHSA with the Illinois Eight-Man Football Association. Do you think that is maybe one of the reasons some of these schools or teams aren't jumping yet? They want to wait till the IHSA assumes oversight?
You know, I think that very well could be, and I'm guessing that the committee or the board that kind of runs it now, the federation there, they're not really excited about, you know, giving up control to the IHSA. But you and I have talked about this for a couple of years. We think it's inevitable, but, you know, so far they have their own championship game at Monmouth. And I know from our perspective and seeing, you know, what it meant to Milledgeville, it was such a, you know, just getting to the championship game meant so much. And, you know, anybody that wants to badmouth, you know, eight-man football, you're not going to, you know, get by with it around me. So.
And I think, too, the other thing is when we talk about the governing body of the sport, I know there's always this, you know, underlying debate, right? It's kind of always there about what is this cutoff for eight-man football as it relates to enrollment, should there be one, or how do you determine that if there's an eight-man team that has a big roster and they're steamrolling opponents? You know, I know this is like a public-private debate when we talk about 11-man football, but you hear some of that about, well, should they be playing, you know, 8-man football anymore? Shouldn't they be going back up to 11-man? And I think, you know, the governing body that probably would be better suited to determine that, you know, they always talk about who's the bad guy, is probably maybe the Illinois High School Association, because I think that's, if there are more teams, and I think both, you know, whether you're pro keeping the sport under the Illinois Eight-Man Football Association, or if you want it to go to the IHSA, the big issue that is going to have to be addressed if there are more teams is what happens and how is enrollment classification determined in terms of whether you're an eight-man team or 11-man team. Is that kind of one of the, you know, the million-dollar questions, do you think, if it relates to bylaws and amendments?
Yeah, I think it probably is, because there's that fear that if you get some larger schools in there, they'll have numbers out that, you know, it'll be just like when they were in 11-man, always, you know, fighting that roster, you know, situation and playing, you know, teams with a lot more players. And the other thing, too, is, you know, people who don't know much about the 8-man game will say, like, to some of these schools, oh, so you may go back to 11-man, you know, because you're getting really good numbers. I don't think you'll see that. I could be wrong. It might be in certain instances, but I don't think this is like a, you know, Band-Aid to keep the football program going. I think it's a permanent solution for all of these teams.
Yeah, and I think, too, the other thing, when you talk about what the number is maybe for the IHSA to get serious about assuming oversight, I think probably, if I remember correctly, somewhere around maybe 50 some odd schools or teams that would have eight-man football. And then I think you would get a little bit more serious about maybe them assuming oversight. But it looks like right now, heading toward, you know, the fall of 2025, we're still at about 30 teams. He's Brian Bruch at WCCI Radio in Savannah. I'm Jim Taylor at WMJ Radio in Aledo. And this is Jim and Brian talking high school sports on the radio.
If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale Jones of Merritt Auctions. The Merritt Auctions team have over 100 years of combined experience in auctions and real estate to help you gain full exposure to the market and achieve maximum return on your assets. Merritt Auctions specializes in live auctions, timed online-only auctions, and virtual online auctions. For a no-obligation consultation to sell your land or machinery, call Dale Jones today.
$15.29, but I'm here.
Hi, I'm Dale Jones with Merritt Auctions. Give me a call at 309-299-6400.
Building relationships, supporting the community and service. These are the things Country Financial stands for. We're neighbors who lend a helping hand and support the fabric of our community, including charitable organizations, sports, financial education, and civic organizations. Since we're already neighbors, let's get together and chat to talk about the things that are important to you and how we can help you protect them. See your local Country Financial representative today.
In Aledo, see me, Tracy Bigham.
Or Jason Potter.
In Edgington, see me, Brent Bigham.
Discover the Diamond Ag difference and take your harvest to the next level. Diamond Ag offers the top seed brands in the industry, including Midwest, Stein, Brevant, LG, and Zotavo. Their nutritionals and crop protection will keep your fields healthy and resilient all year long, and no one in the ag retail industry offers a broader selection of fertilizer products and services. Contact seed manager Brian Brooks at 309-582-4681. Diamond Ag, with locations in Aledo, Alexis, and Knoxville, deeply rooted in quality people and quality service.
Step into style and comfort at 6140 Run in Galesburg. If you need new footwear, 6140 Run has just the right fit. Check out their quality brands for fitness, Hoka, Saucony, and Brooks, for just hanging out, Hey Dude and Birkenstock, and even for work, Red Wing and Wolverine. Whether you're hitting the trails, taking a stroll, or just kicking back, 6140 Run has you covered. Stop by their location at 185 Main Street in Galesburg and find your perfect pair today.
Winding down the WRMJ Sports Line on a Saturday morning from the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios. I wonder if Dale Jones would have liked board operating last night.
He would have had a great time. He would have been loving life.
Yeah. What did you think of, like, just getting a chance to broadcast that game?
It was a joy, man. I just love games like that that are the local schools playing each other. That's what it always should be. And it was just... that game had so much hype going into it, and it lived up to it in every single way. It was just drama-filled throughout with a kind of crazy final possession where Rock Ridge puts up three shots in the last 10 seconds. And like you said, every single one that went up, I'm like...
it's in.
Rockets win, you know? But it was awesome. It was just so fun. And like I said a couple of times in the open of the show today, I just really hope there's a third game between them, because the last three they've played have come down to the last shot at the buzzer, all three of them. And it's been two in a row that Sherrard has gotten the better of Rock Ridge in. And man, that'd be crazy, playing those schools playing for a sectional title at Sherrard. That would be really, really fun.
Well, and I'm so happy. The one thing I'm happy about, because my favorite sport is high school basketball, always has been. It just is. That's what I like following. And I know early when I started, the sectional was always in this area. Like, it was either Sherrard, it was either Rock Ridge or Orion, kind of where was the rotation of where the sectionals were. Now, here in the, you know, basically from the mid-20 teens to now, the sectional somehow has got away from us in this area, and I'm so happy, finally.
Well,
we get
2 years
back.
Ago is at Orion, so I mean, you don't want to go.
Yeah, that's right. But I mean, for the most part, though, that was always those. It was basically the 3 year rotation, right? Was those three schools. Well, and then they moved it to Geneseo, which I was mad about. I still think that night should have been played at Orion, if that's what the assignment is. But anyway, the thing that I like that it is back here locally. And the four teams that are going to be there, if you like high school hoops, small school high school hoops, at that sectional that week will be a great four teams trying to get to the Elite Eight in a local gym. And if you're a high school hoop fan, that's going to be the place to be. And hopefully the two of the four teams are local teams that are playing there in the semifinals, which would be awesome. And that's worth following. Like I said, you know, on that other subsectional, it's nice to now keep your attention on Bloomington Central Catholic, El Paso Gridley, Peoria Notre Dame, Peoria Emanuel, and U-High. And I think, though, the wild cards remain in the conference race still. I mean, it's clear that the favorite now is Sherrard, but Monmouth, Roseville, Riverdale, and Orion still could have something to say about that here in the final, you know, month or so of the season.
Yeah, I agree.
And we have a local broadcast today. United's 20-2 on the season in girls basketball.
They are number 9 in 1A. Now, they have lost to A-Town twice, and their schedule, I mean, has not been very strong. But you play who's on it, and I think they have a win over Lanai Bluffs, which is a pretty good team. So, yeah, we'll see. I think it should be a good game with Mercer County. They played the first time, and granted, this was back in November, and it was 30-20 when a lot of games are sloppy that time of the year. But, like, I mean, that was back when Mercer County was playing without their best player, right? Shadeo wasn't playing yet. So I think today should be a pretty good game.
What advice do you have? Because I'm going to call the game today. What advice do you have for me calling the United team that has two twins, two sets of twins, and then there's a third sister with one of the sets of twins?
No, cousin.
Cousin, okay.
So it's not very fun. It's there'll be times,
and that's on the same team. So I did, like, back in the day. I told
there'll be times in this game today where there are for United 3 kids named Anderson, 2 kids named Flynn, and for Mercer County 3 kids named Hoffman, 2 kids named Collison. On the so you'll have 10 players and 4 last names. That happened when we did that game earlier in the year, and that was just really, really challenging. And the thing that sucks is, like, I don't really know the United kids, and they're twins anyway, but, like, in girls, the back of the jersey, a lot of times their hair covers it, so it's, like, just guessing which one it is.
Anderson scores. Yeah. So I just will say the closest thing I ever had to that was the Leathers twins and the Gale triplets back in Galva. Versus Westboro back in the early 1990s. So that'll be about somewhere around 12 noon broadcast today for United.
Yeah,
and
that'll be
Mercer
you
County.
On the call.
That's right. And then we have the Mercer County boys Monday against the Fightin' Farmers of Farmington. My favorite Farmington Mercer County would have been Alito memory. I'll never forget when Farmington first got to the Olympic Conference, ranked number one in state. They came up here on a snowy Saturday night. There was a question whether the game was going to be played or not, and the Green Dragons beat them that night here in Alito.
That's probably the only win in Alito / Mirko basketball history over the number one ranked team in the state, right? I mean, it's got to be.
And then just a couple years later, in the regional semifinals here, Yorkwood at the time in two class system, they were loaded. They were 27-0, and that's when Nick Bull was a senior, Colin Conway was a senior, and Alito almost lost in the play-in game to Alexis and then beat Yorkwood in the regional semifinals. And then I think this is like we talk about the different generations. Then Rockridge would beat beat Alito in the regional championship game down to Alito, and I believe the point guard for the Rockridge Rockets that season was none other than Josh Wheatley.
Awesome. It all comes back around.
I remember, but anyway, you want to talk about some old time memories of broadcast. But anyway, I'm looking forward to, because I think the Eagles have a chance to get to 13-13 in girls basketball. They've had two nice wins here in the second half of the season, you know, winning at Illini West a couple of weeks ago, I thought was a nice win. And then, of course, winning at the Shoebox this week against a pretty good Monmouth-Roseville team.
Yep, I think that'll wrap us up this morning. I got to get going.
All right, that'll do it. And from the Dale Jones Auctioneer Studios for Ty Taylor, Jim Taylor, WRMJ Sports.
This has been Sportsline on WRMJ and WRMJ.com. Brought to you by Diamond Ag, your local ag retail supplier built from your local specifications with locations in Alito, Alexis, and Knoxville. Your local country financial representatives, Tracy Bigham, Jason Potter, and Brent Bigham, offering insurance for your life, health, home, farm, or business by 6140 Running Galesburg. Your spot for custom-fitted running and walking shoes, Hey Dude shoes, and Birkenstock sandals, plus Red Wing and Wolverine work boots. And by Dale Jones with Merit Auctions. If you have farmland or machinery to sell, call Dale at 309-299-6400. The preceding has been a presentation of WRMJ Sports, your high school sports voice of Western Illinois.
Playing the best country music.